We will not use our vaccines to secure favors from other countries.
The U.S. president makes a point about COVID vaccine distribution. It's Friday, May 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Coming your way, a U.N. official has praised for new U.S. sanctions on Myanmar. A record high number of those displaced inside their own countries. Repercussions continue almost a year since the death of George Floyd. Travel volume in the U.S. is likely to increase by at least 60%. The U.S. president says a new truck can be a force against China. It is all on today's VOA Asia. With domestic vaccine needs largely fulfilled, the Biden administration is ramping up efforts to help vaccinate the world. How would the U.S. global pandemic response be different than the so-called vaccine diplomacy of China and Russia? White House correspondent Patsy Whitakaswara has this report.
125 million Americans, that's 38% of the population, are now fully vaccinated. 138 million, 48%, has had at least one shot. Children ages 12 to 15 are also getting vaccinated. So now the country is beginning to turn its focus on helping vaccinate the world.
We will not use our vaccines to secure favors from other countries.
Earlier this week, President Joe Biden announced an additional 20 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, a total of 80 million doses to be shared via COVAX, the UN mechanism for lower and middle-income countries to access vaccines. It's part of an early phase of a global strategy his administration has yet to outline. But they insist U.S. efforts will be different than the vaccine diplomacy of China and Russia. Both have provided tens of millions of doses in many countries, but some say they come with strings attached. Jeremy Conendick is the executive director for COVID-19 at the U.S. Agency for International Development.
What we see China and Russia trying to do is, in effect, use small amounts of vaccine sales to extract political concessions and gain political influence. What we want to do is use a mass response to end the pandemic and let that be the legacy of what America is trying to do here.
Biden is expected to shore up a global pandemic response strategy at the G7 summit in June. This group of the world's most advanced economies say they want to lead in pandemic recovery, but they are also the ones criticized as vaccine hoarders. Jenny Ottenhoff is Senior Policy Director of Global Health at the global advocacy group One Campaign.
Wealthy countries could vaccinate 100% of their population, including children, and still have 1.3 billion doses left over to share. And if we look at more realistic numbers, like say 70% of their population, there would be almost 2 billion doses to share. So what we're asking these wealthy countries to do is look at their pipeline of vaccines and start making plans to share doses immediately so that we can be scaling up vaccine access around the world.
The U.S., with decades of success dealing with previous global health crises, has an advantage compared to China and Russia. Richard Reitinger is Vice President for Global Health at the research group RTI International.
But whether it's the Ebola pandemic in West Africa or its contribution to the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, I'm very confident that the U.S. is going to step up and play an important leadership role in the global COVID-19 response going forward.
Gail Smith, Biden's point person for global pandemic response, said the U.S. effort could be as ambitious as the Marshall Plan.
In the summer of 1947, Secretary of State Marshall had proposed to aid the nations of Europe.
An American program providing aid to Western Europe after World War II.
The Marshall Plan was indeed about resources. It was also about policies. It was also about markets and dealing with the economic impacts of World War II, and similarly, we've got the same kinds of impacts in this pandemic. I think it is worth thinking that boldly.
Just how bold, the world is waiting to see. Beyond donating doses, the U.S. has pledged $4 billion for COVAX and has supported waiving vaccine patents at the World Trade Organization. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration Wednesday authorized storage of Pfizer Incorporated and German partner BioNTech SE's COVID-19 vaccine at standard freezer temperatures for up to 1 month, an effort to make the vaccine more widely available. Libby Hogan reports.
The Pfizer and BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine was authorized on Wednesday to be stored at standard freezer temperatures for up to a month. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said the approval should make the vaccine more widely available. Unopened, unthawed vials of the vaccine were previously only able to be stored for a maximum of 5 days. Now, they can be stored in a refrigerator at 2 to 8 degrees Celsius for 31 days. The change is an important one for global and remote US facilities that have poor transport and storage infrastructure. Canada has made a similar move to relax the refrigerator requirements for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. The vaccine was granted emergency use authorization in the US and Canada last December. This month, both countries approved the use of the vaccine on children as young as 12.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. Taiwan is facing its worst outbreak of the COVID-19 so far. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more.
The authorities have announced a worrisome 63 new cases, not having a clear connection to existing cases. In the last week, the island has recorded more than 1,000 cases alone, accounting for more than a third of its pandemic total of 2,825. Now schools are shut for 2 weeks, indoor gatherings of more than 5 people are banned, and outdoor gatherings of more than 10 people. Most cases hitherto were among travellers. The island had been hailed for its success in keeping out the virus through robust public health measures like quarantines and contact tracing. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You can find out more about these stories by checking our website at boanews.com as well as all of our social media platforms. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at boanews.com. Taliban insurgents capture a district in eastern Afghanistan and negotiate a temporary truce with government forces in another. South Korean president to meet Biden at White House this week. New Zealand's spending plan includes rebuilding an Antarctic base. Japan Health Panel approves Moderna and AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines. India battles a rash of black fungus cases hitting COVID-19 patients there. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A UN human rights expert welcomed the announcement of a new set of government sanctions against Myanmar's junta by the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada, highlighting in particular the U.S. designation of the junta itself or the State Administrative Council, the SAC, for sanctions. Tom Andrews, the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Myanmar, said it's imperative that the international community ramp up the size and scope of sanctions on the junta, ramps up its repression of the people of Myanmar. These latest sanctions prohibit all U.S. nationals from providing funds, goods, or services that benefit the State Administrative Council. Andrews also welcomed the new sanctions imposed Monday by the United Kingdom and Canada, including sanctions targeting the junta's profiting from the timber and gems trade. Andrews said, however, that more must be done, and done quickly. Since the military coup in February, thousands of people in Myanmar's ethnic states have been displaced by renewed conflict between the National Army and ethnic armed organizations. With reports of daily shelling and regular airstrikes, many are fleeing to the border with Thailand, where a youth group is trying to help. Tommy Walker reports from Mesot, Thailand.
The city of Mesot is said to be home to over 100,000 Burmese. Many are refugees who fled conflict in their homeland Myanmar across the border. Others are migrants who came here for better economic opportunities. The Moy River runs along the city and makes up a portion of the border between Thailand and Myanmar. It is here in Mesot that a group of young volunteers formed a group called the Union of Thai Myanmar Borders Youths. Their mission is to provide support and aid to those in need across the border, especially Myanmar's Civil Disobedience Movement, or CDM.
Right now we're going back and focus on the CDM again because of as the time is changing, the need is changing. Right now the time is needed to support CDM the most.
The movement in Myanmar includes thousands of people refusing to work under military rule, but that effort has left many people without work and struggling to survive. The Union of Border Youth is short on funds and discussing ways to raise enough money so they can keep sending support. Group member Yen Ta Ang is from Mandalay in Myanmar.
Here, you know, for our group, so we are also facing with a challenge in, you know, fund shortage. That's why. So now we are, you know, in talks that how to, you know, like make promotion and how to make the fundraising, you know, to keep supporting, you know, effectively for those who have joined the CDM.
They are also finding it difficult to send supplies because of tightened border controls. For the street protesters, the union has a small stock of supplies, including gas masks, gloves, and helmets.
So this is the helmet that we sent, you know, for those who are protesting, you know, in the front line here. So we include our group logo and this like a little message that, you know, take care. Actually, you know, we do not remember, you know, how much so we have sent, but the amount is, I think, over thousands, maybe 2,000 or 3,000.
But with COVID-19 cases surging, authorities have tightened border controls, making it now increasingly difficult for Thailand-based support groups to send over their aid into Myanmar. But one thing is for sure, as the trouble and violence continues across the border, these support groups will not give up. This is Tommy Walker reporting for Voice of America in Mesot, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, China said on Thursday an American warship had illegally entered its territorial waters in the South China Sea and was expelled. The United States denies that. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you are with us on VOA Asia. The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center reports the number of people displaced inside their own countries because of conflict, violence, and weather-related disasters reached an all-time high of 55 million by the end of last year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Experts tracking these events thought sanity would prevail during the COVID-19 pandemic, resulting in fewer conflicts and triggering fewer forced displacements. They also hoped global efforts against climate change to prevent disasters would protect more people. However, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, says the verdict is in and it is not good. He says last year, conflict and disasters caused more than 40 million new displacements, with some people being forced to move many times out of their homes.
40 million times a child, a woman or a man was displaced in 2020. That's more than one person per second. And it's continuing, so a lot of people have been displaced also in 2021 while we speak.
The report says Syria has the highest number of internally displaced people, followed by the Democratic Republic of Congo and Colombia. It says sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, and North Africa generated 90% of all new conflict-related displacements. The director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, Alexandra Bilek, says escalating violence in Ethiopia and strengthening of extremist groups in Mozambique and Burkina Faso fueled some of the world's fastest growing displacement crises.
In Ethiopia, we're looking at over 500,000 new displacements that were triggered by violence in the Tigray region, alongside, as you know, reports of human rights violations and abuses. But in across the rest of the continent, we saw how armed groups exploited simmering disputes and expanded their influence across the Sahel, as well as in Nigeria, Somalia, and Mozambique.
Weather-related events, primarily storms and floods, were responsible for 98% of all new disaster displacements recorded last year. The report says nearly 70% took place in South Asia and East Asia and the Pacific. Elsewhere, it says the Atlantic hurricane season was the most active on record, with 30 main storms. It notes hurricanes Laura, Eta, and Iota alone triggered 2.7 million new displacements across 14 Central American and Caribbean countries. It adds 1.7 million displacements were recorded in the United States from devastating wildfires and hurricanes. Authors of the report cite this as an important reminder that high-income countries are just as exposed to disasters as low- and middle-income countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Chinese citizens living in Thailand began being vaccinated Thursday as part of China's global campaign to inoculate its nationals living and working abroad. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. May 25th will mark 1 year since a white police officer in Minneapolis killed George Floyd, a black man. There is holding widespread U.S. protest against police brutality and systemic racism have had reverberations across industries and U.S. government. More from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
After George Floyd was killed last year in police custody, protest exploded in America's streets. Reaction also extended to corporate boardrooms. To show solidarity, some of America's biggest companies donated millions to support racial justice causes. Justin Hansford teaches law at Howard University in Washington, where he also heads the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center.
I did see there being a rush of real financial contributions coming from corporate America, moving to HBCUs, contributions to social justice organizations, Black Lives Matter. They raised tens of millions of dollars, much more than they've raised in the past 7 years.
In sports, the commissioner of American professional football apologized to players for not listening to their concerns about racism sooner, committing $250 million to tackle the issue over the next decade.
The murder of George Floyd is tragic, painful, and unacceptable.
Big box retailer Walmart pledged to donate $100 million over 5 years to fight systemic racism. Soft drink conglomerate PepsiCo, meanwhile, retired the 132-year-old Aunt Jemima Pancake Mix and Syrup brand, whose logo featured an image of a black woman. The U.S. company said it recognized the character's origins were based on a racial stereotype. It also committed to a five-year, $400 million initiative to lift up black communities. Despite such actions, America still has healing to do, according to Robert Sanders of the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at the University of New Haven.
One of the things that is tough for the African-American community and those who empathize with us is there hasn't been any time to heal. So from one monstrous event, as you begin the stages of grief and healing and all of those things, we roll right into another one.
The conviction last month of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was a watershed moment, according to Hansford.
Many of us have gone generations without ever expecting to see a police officer convicted for killing a black man. I was thinking about the Rodney King trial, the Trayvon Martin trial. I expected the same outcome. The different outcome to me has a lot to do with the fact that the protests raised awareness in the minds of the jury to the point where they were more knowledgeable about the realities of whether or not a police officer is 100% right 100% of the time.
There must be a reckoning for other police officers who were present when Floyd died, Sanders says.
There are three other perpetrators who, in some ways, you can look at their illegal activity as even more horrifying, as aiding, abetting the murder that they saw in front of their own eyes as their fellow citizens pleaded for them to get engaged and to stop it.
Those officers are awaiting trial. Meanwhile, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland recently opened sweeping probes of police departments in two U.S. cities, including the one where Floyd died.
They're looking at the facts of what's going on in our nation and in our policing. And I'm hopeful that, you know, going into and launching a civil probe of policing in Minneapolis and a civil probe of policing in Metro Louisville, where Breonna Taylor was killed, is a start. They are not solutions, but they're a start on a path toward finding a solution, at least in the justice system.
Democrats in the House of Representatives passed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. The bill would limit the qualified immunity police officers have against civil suits and create a national registry of police misconduct. The legislation faces hurdles in the Senate, where Republican Tim Scott has introduced his own police reform bill and is in negotiations with Democrats in the evenly divided chamber. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, rescuers recovered 12 more bodies Thursday as officials say hopes fade for 26 people still missing after a barge with 261 people on board sank off Mumbai when a powerful cyclone lashed the region this week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, compared to 2020, travel volume in the United States this upcoming Memorial Day weekend is likely to increase by at least 60%. Among the most excited travelers this year are millennials and seniors. Licia Bacalé has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Like many others, David Bain and his family spent the last 14 months quarantined at home. But after receiving both doses of the COVID vaccine, he's making lots of travel plans for the summer.
We are considering more than just the sort of trips that we can drive to. We're considering places we can fly to, like the Selva Verde Lodge in Costa Rica, or just north of Barcelona.
And travel agents say many Americans are making similar plans. Driving remains the most popular means of transportation. Over half of Americans are planning a long road trip.
When it comes to the road trip, people are just more comfortable traveling in their own vehicle, especially last year in the pandemic. It's your own car, it's your own space. You decide who you're going with, when you're going, and where you're stopping.
The keenest travelers this summer are seniors. They are ready to go abroad to buy plane tickets or a cruise ship tour. For Lesi Bokalets in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We continue on VOA Asia. Ford has formally unveiled its new F-150 electric pickup truck. The AP's Ed Donahue has more.
Ford is making a big bet on the Lightning. The Lightning will be able to travel up to 300 miles per battery charge. CEO Jim Farley says this is the path ahead.
We know this customer really well. They trust us. And if there's a company who's going to take them into an electric future, it's Ford.
But Ford may have a hard time selling it to people who build homes, maintain lawns, or plow snow. Jimmy Williams owns a landscaping company in Chicago.
Because we're working from 12 to 14 hours every day, all day. And we don't have enough time to, you know, constantly be charging up equipment here and there.
Starting price for Ford's Lightning is near $40,000. I'm Ed Donahue.
Earlier this week, President Biden got a chance to test drive the new electric truck. He framed the new vehicle in the context of competition against China. VOA's Patsy Whitaker-Squara is back with us with that story.
The future of the auto industry is electric. There's no turning back.
Biden is framing his push in the context of competition with China, currently the world leader in electric vehicle manufacturing, as well as the largest and fastest growing market.
Today, China has a bigger manufacturing scale than all other countries. But I got news for them. They will not win this race.
Patsy Wirakuswara, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.